This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. This half hour is brought to you by Larson & Larson. They are my intellectual property lawyers, and they should be yours. At the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be talking to Jin Phillips, whose newest book, or I don't know if it's her newest book or her only book, but her book is called Fierce Kingdom. Wallace is coming up. I'm going to be talking to Wallace.
Okay, I just got a little confused. Huh? You're good.
Okay. Big Ed is protecting me today because it is one of these crazy days here at the studio. I was already up and running here at 9:30 in the morning. My first guest is Wallace Strobe, but at the bottom of the hour, I am going to be talking to Jin Phillips. So I will go straight to Wallace because Wallace is on the phone, right, Wallace?
He is indeed.
Okay, Wallace. Wow, I am so happy to talk to you. It's so funny. You know, you are a great writer. I've been enjoying your books, and one of the books has a title that I just love. The first time I saw the title, I said, oh, I just love that title. And that's Shoot the Woman First.
Yeah, okay.
I love that title. That just struck me as, woo, a book that I had to read.
Well, there was a certain amount of controversy involved in that title, I think, for people who didn't know what it referred to, which in short is that it's probably apocryphal, but it said that in the anti-terrorism task force in Europe, especially in Germany, they teach them if they're in a room where there's multiple targets or multiple terrorists, they should shoot the women terrorists first because the women need to be three times as ruthless and three times as deadly and three times as committed to survive in that world, and that a woman will shoot first. You know, will be less inclined to, hesitate. And so they teach these commandos to shoot the women terrorists first. And that became sort of a metaphor for Chrissa Stone, my heroine in that book, who turns out to be deadlier than the men she comes up against.
Well, it's true. And even if we look at like a television show like NCIS, if you were going up against all of them, you would have shot Ziva first because you would not want Ziva to be the last one there because she'd get you for sure.
Yeah, I think there was a worry that, out of context, the title might seem a little misogynist, but it's actually the opposite.
Exactly. I thought it was funny. I loved the title when I saw it. I thought, I like that title. So, you know, we have to do a little introduction into who you are because Wallace Strobe, I came across you actually from another writer, Lawrence Block.
Legendary
Lawrence Block. And Larry is a real friend to Joy on Paper. He's been on here many times. But some years ago, he had written a story called A Burglar's Complaint.
Mm-hmm.
And in there, his character, who is also a thief, his main character is called Bernie Rodenbaugh. And in this story that Larry wrote, he writes that Bernie is reading the latest Wallace Strobe book. Now, wasn't that sweet of him to do that?
Yeah, Larry's been very generous. He's a great guy.
Well, he is. He's a wonderful, wonderful person. And as you said, he's a generous person. He loves to help up-and-coming authors. And so just by putting your name in that book, anybody who hadn't heard of you, once they read Larry's story, they said, if Larry Block is reading Wallace Strobe, we have to read Wallace Strobe. And, of course, Larry is always right, as he will tell you. So, you know, your main character is also a thief in a, and Krissa, tell us about Krissa Stone.
Well, I had always wanted to write a novel where the point of view, the main point of view, was from a criminal. I just thought that was, you know, that opened up a whole different world. And I never really wrote about law enforcement because I just, you know, there are so many people that are doing it very well that I just wanted to, you know, find some new ground. Now, my first two books had been about a ex-state trooper in New Jersey, The Barbed Wire Kiss and The Heartbreak Lounge. And then in Gone to November, my third book, half of that was told from the point of view of a aging and ailing black hitman from Newark, New Jersey, who goes down to a rural Florida town to try and recover some missing money. And the second half of that book was told from the point of view of a female sheriff's deputy and a single mom who eventually comes up against him. So what I wanted to do was sort of combine those two things, to have a book told from the point of view of a criminal and have that criminal be a woman, because then that opens up another whole world of, you know, woman in the man's world. And, you know, a woman will do things differently than a man. She'll make alliances. She'll refrain from violence. So it seemed to me to be that there was a lot of interesting ground to hoe there. And then after I wrote the first book about her, Cold Shot to the Heart, it just immediately, you know, I immediately had the idea for the next one. So, there was a lot there to process. So I happily wrote four books about her.
Well, and I love The Devil's Share.
Thank you.
I love the premise. First of all, it was very on point. The story of Iraqi artworks and treasures that had been stolen, and Krissa is sent in to steal them again, and that's a wonderful story.
Thanks. It actually turned out to be kind of prescient because I think I was a little ahead of the curve on that, because about, you know, the book came out in 2015, and it wasn't until 2016 that we were starting to hear about ISIS, especially, you know, blowing up historic sites in Iraq, or stealing and then selling them on the black market, stealing artifacts and selling them on the black market. So that was, I'd done some research into that early on, and it just seemed to be a natural, you know, the whole idea of looting just seemed to be a natural fit for Chris's world.
And it's a very exciting story.
Thank you.
Exactly. This whole idea when the Iraqi war first happened and we started hearing about, at that time, just the danger to the artifacts from the point of view of any bombings that were going on and all of this ancient history that was being destroyed. And then, as you said, later on, when ISIS and all these terrorists came in, and with the deliberate, I mean, when I know we had a war, but we try always to protect, you know, as much as we can, not destroying important artifacts. But boy, these people are absolutely insane. They go out and they deliberately want to destroy history. And in the most part, either they destroy it or they sell it. If we're lucky, they sell it.
Yeah, and the villain in the book, who's been illegally pilfering all these artifacts, uses that as his defense. That, you know, if it wasn't for him stealing them, that they would be, you know, destroyed. So I always like to give my villains enough motivation that they kind of sound right when you hear it.
Well,
I mean, they'll go to any extent to get what they want.
Exactly. I mean, he's a villain, but we still do. We want these artifacts saved. It's so sad to think of all of the amazing historical buildings, artifacts that have been destroyed.
Yeah, it is. It's a shame, and it's still going on.
Now, Chris, that one, The Devil's Share, was a fourth in the series. Is that?
Yes. Yes.
We're not done with S series, I hope.
No. The next book, which will be out next year from Little Brown via their Mulholland Books line, is a standalone. It's not a Chris book. It's called Some Die Nameless, and it's more of a almost an adventure sort of political slash. I don't know how to describe it actually, but that will not be a Chris book. But the she definitely will return. I mean, I think about her all the time, and I just recently wrote a short story featuring her.
And I was going to say, your fans think about her all the time. As a matter of fact, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, she's the first character I've ever written about where, as soon as I finished a book about her, or even before I finished the book, I immediately had an idea for the next one. And that happened with all four of the books about her. And then at the end of The Devil's Share, I kind of felt like we both needed a little vacation. She got, you know, pretty banged up in that last book. And the book ends with her, you know, taking a break from that world. And so I figured we both needed a break, but she'll be back.
And you'll come back with fresh and bright new ideas. And that is good, because sometimes authors are tempted to get into that, I must have a book out every year on, you know, the same line. And it is not good for the character. It's not probably good for the author, except maybe his bank account or her bank account. But there is a point where you want to make sure that you have that quality and that inspiration that the next book is going to be worthy of the ones that preceded it.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, it's this mixture of instinct and, you know, will. It's hard to describe. You know, you kind of know when you're ready to write something, and you kind of know when you need to take a break. The only thing is sometimes it's difficult to tell, you know, whether the universe is telling you stop or the universe is telling you try harder, you know. This current book I bailed on twice just because I felt like I hit a wall. And I did go back to it finally, and then, you know, some of those problems eventually got solved and the book got written. So it's hard to know exactly what, when you're moving forward, except you just got to try and move forward and then see what happens. And sometimes there's paths, you know, no roads are straight.
And that's part of the fun of being a writer, that you do find yourself on different paths. I mean, there are times when a subject or a character will just overcome you and you can't stop writing about it. And there are times where you do have to let them, well, in Chris's case, we have to let her heal a little bit and come back strong again.
Yeah, it's fun, and the flip side of that is abject terror, because you don't know if it's, you know, if what you're working on is going to work out. The important thing is to, you know, finish it if you can. And I have to credit Larry Block for this in his most recent book. From it had a couple different titles. Now it's from. Instead of to print, it's to pixels, writing a novel. And one of the things he had in there is a little short chapter, actually, on when to abandon a novel. And he said in that book, if you have to abandon it, abandon it, but don't fool yourself into thinking you're going to go back to it. And that struck me, and I thought, well, I really need to, you know, maybe I just need to take a breath, look around me a little more, you know, get a little deeper into the book. This is the one I was, you know, considering abandoning. And he got me back on track just thinking about that. And then I was able to get back in the book. I made some adjustments, which sort of knocked down that wall. And then I was able to finish it. So,
well, Larry's always...
The process is never the same from book to book. At least it's not for me.
Well, Larry's always an inspiration, and his ideas are always great. And, of course, he has written a lot about the art of writing.
Yeah.
And you did one of the, probably the best interviews with Stephen King, also on the subject of writing.
Yeah, that was back in the early 90s for Writer's Digest. And I had tried to interview him a couple times, and it was a period where he was sort of getting out of the public eye because I think he felt he'd been overexposed. But I kept trying, and I had done an interview with Writer's Digest with the writer Clive Barker, is a horror fantasy writer, and I sent that back to King on another attempt, and he liked that, and then his secretary called me and said, okay, Steve will do it. And so we did two phone interviews. And yeah, it was the first time, really, to my knowledge, that he'd actually discussed the craft of writing and how he went about what he did. And a lot of that material ended up in his book on writing a few years later. Not material from my story, but you know, some of the things he talked about ended up in that book.
And of course, that's a wonderful book on writing. He's rather elusive. I have been trying to get him on the program. I've had ups and downs with my contacts with him, and I'm just hoping that at one point he'll say, okay, I'll get on the phone and talk to me, because, of course, you know, not just his books are impressive and inspired people, but his book on writing is one of the best, along with Larry's book.
Yeah, well, the question is always, can you teach writing? And I actually was at a convention a few years ago when Larry was a guest of honor, and there was a Q&A afterwards, and I said to him, can you teach writing? And the consensus seems to be, his idea was, you know, reading is sort of like learning how to write, because everything is right there on the page. You know, how it's done, how it's constructed is right there. You can see it. As opposed to, you know, a art form that's a little more tricky to see, you know, what it consists of. My feeling is that it's like singing. You have to sort of have a voice to start with. And usually, immediately, when you first start writing, that voice is imitative of something else. And then eventually you grow into your own voice. And then you can train your voice. But can you train a voice that, you know, you don't have in the first place is always the question. And there's really no answer to that, you know, until you actually start to do it.
It is a fascinating process.
Yeah, and, you know, people always ask me, you know, for advice, and I say the same thing that Stephen King does. Read a lot and write a lot, and that's the only advice anybody can give you. You know, read everything. And write as much as you can.
And speaking of,
if it's there, you'll find your voice.
And speaking of reading, of course, in sort of the genre that you're involved in, there are so many wonderful writers who can be inspiring. Of course, Larry Block is one of them. Were you influenced by Raymond Chandler?
Oh yeah, early on. You know, I think everybody was, actually, who writes in the crime genre. You know, I started reading, you know, in my teen years, you know, the very impressionable years, I think, are your early teens, where you start finding stuff that's going to mean a lot to you in life. And I started originally with Dashiell Hammett and then into Chandler and James M. Cain. And I'm probably, you know, what I do leans a little more towards the Hammett side of things than the Chandler side of things. But they were all terrific writers. And, you know, if you're going to do a master class on crime writing, you know, you have to start with those three, Hammett, Chandler, and Cain. The thing I really admire about Larry is Larry's written over 100 books, I believe, and he's, you know, he's been in the business 50 years, and he is still going. Now, his last couple books I've really enjoyed.
Oh, he's always hot. I mean, he just keeps up the momentum, and as you say, his books really are always compelling.
Yes.
Now, one of the, it's so funny, I had been thinking about Raymond Chandler because it was his birthday a few days ago, and it's hard to believe when you look at his books today, when you read his books today, and they seem so fresh, that he was born in 1888.
Yeah.
Another one who was born back in those days, 1894, was Dashiell Hammett. And when you read Dashiell Hammett today, you really don't feel that, you know, you think, wow, he was born 2 centuries ago. Not just, you know, it's amazing, isn't it, how fresh their work is?
Yeah, those were two writers who, you know, found their voice, and it was a unique voice in both cases. And, yeah, you can read Hammett today, and aside from some of the construction and the prose, which may seem a little archaic, the attitude is right there. It comes through.
And, of course, the character with Dashiell Hammett, and you have forever Sam Spade, who will live in as long as people are reading books. And it's nice, I think, with you that, you know, Krissa is a character, I think, that is very strong, and one that once readers have encountered her, she remains a character that is in their mind, which is important. You know, when you think about 100 years from now, people will be reading your books. Isn't that exciting?
Well, I won't be around. I'm sure I won't be around to know, but yeah, it would be nice to think. But
it would be nice.
Yeah.
Was it exciting when you got, authors always remember their first big check. Do you remember your first big check?
My first big check? Well,
yeah.
I guess that's relative. it wasn't that, you know, it's the high points, and there's high points and there's low points always. There's, you know, exciting, you know, very exciting things, and there's crushing disappointments, and you just got to sort of modulate between the two. The excitement was finding out my first book had sold to St. Martin's Press, which I found out in August of 2001. The book came out in January of 2003. So, I mean, that was exciting. There have been some great moments. Back in 2012, a Showtime Network optioned the Krissa books, and they had a pilot script commissioned by Ted Talley, who won an Oscar for the script for Silence of the Lambs. And they developed that for a couple of years, and he wrote a script, and it never went to pilot.
It went to turnaround. They're always turning it around and around and around. And
so the rights eventually reverted back to me. But, I was able to go out to L.A., and we did meetings for 2 days with different networks, and that was a lot of fun, and it was a good education, too, even though nothing came of it.
Well, you never know. You know, having been a scriptwriter and having worked on projects like this, they go around and around, and it's strange. How Clive Cussler was telling me, I think one of his projects was optioned 18 times. He's made more money on the options than he would have ever made.
It's a different world out there, as I found. You know, publishing is essentially 6 blocks of Manhattan, and everybody knows everybody. And my L.A. experience, which was great, I have no complaints at all, but that's a different world, and I didn't really know, how it worked. I had a much better idea after those 3 days were through, but it is a different world.
Oh, absolutely. You would be more comfortable probably with Martians than with the people.
I have to say, everybody I spoke to at the networks, everybody I met with, everybody was extremely smart. And mostly extremely young too, but everybody was really on point.
Oh, I know, and extremely young. You know, I am trying to promote a project that takes place in Vietnam War with the F-105 pilots who were
Thunder Chief.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, okay.
The Thud, and I've been working on this project. It's called Forgotten F-105 Warriors. And I have been working on this project for several years now, and I have met with these young people, and they don't know, they can't put the wars in order. They're not sure exactly which, you know, time period it's in. So it's funny dealing with them sometimes. It can be very amusing. But we live in hope that we will see Krissa on the boob tube or the little screen, or now it's a big screen, 55 inches. But we hope, because we need some new characters. I am so bored with everything that's on television right now. So we can live in hope.
Well, there's a lot on television right now. That's the thing. And there's a lot of great stuff. And there's a lot of stuff that, you know, disappears pretty quickly. But you know, as everybody says, it's a cliche now. But you know, all the really good writing is on TV.
Well, I want to thank you for being on today, and I want to say also it's I think another exciting point for writers today is that they actually get a page on Wikipedia. So that's always exciting. Exactly.
That's how you know you're alive.
That's it. Then you know you've made it. Well,
yes.
Wallace, I want to thank you for joining me today. It's been great talking to you. And I talk to people. You see, you didn't have a book coming out. I don't wait for people to have a book coming out because I want people to go out and read your Chris Stone series now, and they'll be ready for the next one when it comes out. And meanwhile, when your new book comes out, you're going to come back, right?
Absolutely.
And we'll talk all about it. And meanwhile, it's a summertime. I'm going to put your books up on my webpage, on my books to read this summer, so that I hope people will go there and read some of your books, okay?
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me.
Well, thanks so much, Wallace, and just keep writing, and we will see you in, when's the new book coming out?
Next summer.
Okay, next summer. Okay, bye for now.
Okay, take care, Betsy.
Okay,
thank
thanks.
Bye.
Okay, now we're going to go to commercial, and then we'll be back with Jin Phillips.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of My Pillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented My Pillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. My Pillow will get you into that deep sleep faster and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry My Pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose.
Mike is offering 50% off his 4-pack special.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 1-800-871-1543 and use the promo code PATSY, and Mike will offer you free shipping. Once again, that's 800-871-1543, promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper. I'm just waiting now here anxiously for my next guest who's, I don't know, I'm going to have fun talking to her. Her name is Jin Phillips, and she's going to be on the line in a few minutes, and she's going to be surprised when I talk to her because I have something special to say to her. And I think we're just, Ed in the control room just picked up the phone, and they're calling in from New York, and it's so exciting always. Do we have Jin on the phone? Not yet. Okay, we're going to wait for a few minutes. Meanwhile, I want to tell everyone that it's just a wonderful, wonderful time of the year to be reading books. And I will have up on my webpage on radio-joyonpaper.com the book club mentions, books that you should read. And one of them, of course, is going to be this book that I'm going to be talking to Jin Phillips about. Is Jin there? Not yet? We still don't have her. Well, we're going to wait. Are we waiting, Ed? They said to wait. Okay, Ed is nodding his head. And so we're just going to wait because she's in somewhere in limbo here between the, it's nice, isn't it, that we still have radio, telephone lines, and somewhere she's on some line and she's coming in. So it's really exciting. Is Jen there? Okay. Jen, are you there?
I am. Is that you, Patsy?
It's me. And I have a problem with you.
Okay, what's that?
I'm not going to talk about your book. I'm not going to talk about Fierce Kingdom, a novel by Jen Phillips, which I'm holding up to the camera right now because we have a camera in here. And the book is called Fierce Kingdom. And I'm not going to talk to Jen about this book because I don't want anybody to know anything about it except that they should just get the book. I mean, I don't, you know, it's so funny, Jen. I get, you know, I get from all of the big publishing houses, I get so many books, and it's, I'm always so excited, and they send me the books and they say, you know, pick the book that you want to read and pick the book that the author that you want to talk to. And they send me this promo material. Now, I have a policy. I never read the promo material.
That's smart.
I don't want to know.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. I don't read it. And I don't read the stuff that they, you know, the promos they put on Amazon, the pre-orders. I never do. I just pick the book up and I start reading. So I don't read the blurbs on the back. I don't read anything because I don't want to know. Because so many of them have been really, really spoiling the story for me, because I was reading one, you know, where if I had read the blurbs, I would have been really disappointed because it would not have been as exciting. But with your book, I started reading your book and I said, oh no. Oh, I mean, I said, oh my gosh, I have a book here. I have such a book here. And it's called Fierce Kingdom. You know, what I'm going to do, I'm not going to talk to you about the book. We're going to talk about the weather. We're going to talk about, you're from Alabama, right?
Yes, that's right.
You don't talk with an accent from Alabama, do you?
I know. Sometimes I feel like people think people from Alabama talk like Alabama in the movies.
Yeah, exactly. Well, people do. You know, I do. I'm from Michigan, and we have this stereotype about people from Alabama. By the way, people, I am not talking to Jen about her book, Fierce Kingdom. I want you to just go out and get it. So I'm going to talk to Jen about all sorts of other wonderful things, like Alabama, which is a wonderful place. Although from, you know, when people from northern Michigan, you know, we're youpers, and we think of Alabama as exactly that. You have this accent that none of us could understand. But it's funny that when I moved to Detroit, everybody thought that youpers had these funny accents. So, you know, I don't know.
No, it's kind of wherever you go.
Exactly,
and,
because I talked to Ace Atkins, and he was born in Alabama, and he also doesn't have any accent. So all of that is out the window. We don't have these stereotypical accents of Alabama, although I do like them. I do like that sound.
No, and sometimes people will really hear it. I think most people, you know, if you travel now, I know everybody's kind of moved around some. You know, I do think whatever your accent is, for most people, it's been kind of muted. Eventually.
Well, of course, you are a fantastic author, and I am telling everyone to buy Fierce Kingdom by Jen Phillips, but I'm not going to talk about the book, actually, because it's just too exciting. It's too exciting. All you have to do is read the first page, and you know you're not going to stop reading it. And if you are, you know, just... order your food by Uber. You know, now everybody can order and have their food delivered by Uber. Forget everything, read the book, and just order in food by Uber. But meanwhile, people should know that...
No, you're leaving it. No, it's very mysterious now. Like, you're building a lot of suspense for... Yes.
Yeah, well, I don't...
You have no idea. Just get it.
Get it. Just get it. Look, I'll give them this. It's about a woman, and she's out for the afternoon. I don't want them to know how long she's going to be gone for that afternoon. I don't want all these spoilers that they put in the thing. She's out for a nice afternoon. Should I say where she is?
I feel like that's not a spoiler.
Okay.
That's okay.
She is in a zoological park, because we're not allowed to say zoo anymore. Did you know that?
No, you can't say
No, politically, it's not politically correct to say zoo, by the way. I will tell you that.
I did not know that. Yeah, well, no, sorry, there's a lot of political incorrectness in the book.
But... Exactly. I'm going to say that, you know, now I just interviewed Linda Fairstein, who is an authority on zoological parks. And the fact that zoological parks don't want us to say that three-letter word because they think it's an, I don't know, another stereotype. But, I mean, I like it. It was a favorite word when I was a kid and with most kids. But now we have to teach all of these little two-year-olds to say zoological park. This should be fun. As a matter of fact, we could do a whole YouTube. This would be a nice way to promote your book. Go out and interview, you know, a whole bunch of kids on the street and say, you are not allowed to say this word, and show them. And they can read it. And they say, you can't say that word, but you have to say zoological park. You could get a lot of funny things. Because we are not going to talk about anything more about this book because people have to read it. Just read. Just trust me.
I'll say it's a very fast-paced book.
No. Fast-paced. It's fast-paced, but we don't know what the pace. I mean, this story, you could be in this zoological park for years and never get out of it. You don't know. You don't want to know. Please, readers, pick up the book, open the first page, start reading, and something will click. Somewhere around the third paragraph, you realize, oh boy, we're talking. We have a woman here who's in tune to some things, and the whole story is going to be so exciting, and you're not going to want to do anything, and you're going to try to hold back not to read it in one go, because that's always awful. I love to read books in one go. On the one side.
So you did not read it in one go.
Well, you know, at one point when you're married and you have a husband who wants to eat, you have to take this little break. But the fact of the matter is, I took a break for that, and then I'm back at it, and I'm finishing it up sometime about 3:30 in the morning. So, yeah, I am telling people, to buy Fierce Kingdom, which is a interesting title. Well, how did you come up with that title? Was that the working title?
Well, now I'm trying to figure out how to tell you without giving away anything.
Well,
about
no, you don't tell me. Don't tell me that. If it gives
you. I will say this. I think I've had. So this is my fifth book that's out. I have never managed to pick a title. They always have working titles, and they always get changed because titles are very sort of sales and marketing based, and I clearly don't understand the equations involved. So this was not my original title, but I do really like it, and I like it because I think it works in a few different ways. There are multiple kinds of fierceness in the book, and there's more than one kind of kingdom. There's kingdom in terms of relationships. Between two people, there's a kingdom that's set up within the walls of the zoological park. you wind up with these people who are there for this one night, many of whom are strangers who are sort of this small kingdom.
Oh no, we're giving away too much. No, they could be there for years. We don't know anything about them. let's talk about the weather. How's the weather? Where are you? Are you in Alabama?
The weather's always I am. No, the weather's. This is the worst possible weather for Alabama now. No, it's you do not want to come here in July or August. I don't. It's always in the 90s about now.
Now
I don't know what it is outside at the moment. I haven't set foot outside today, but no. If you come to Alabama, then you want to aim for like fall or winter.
Well, I do want to tell my listeners that we know that Jin is a great writer. Your first novel, which is called The Well and the Mine, was a Barnes & Noble Discover Award winner, right?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And you got $10,000. Wow.
I did, and a nice trip to New York. And it was very cool. That first book came out from a small publisher that puts out like usually 10 to 12 books a year. And so the whole Barnes & Noble Discover Award thing was very surprising, and it was one of my more thrilling professional moments.
Well,
except that I had to give a speech when I won, and no one told me that I needed to have a speech prepared. So, other than that, it's really the only downside.
Well, of course, I'm telling people every few minutes in this interview that they have to buy your book, Fierce Kingdom, and they have to buy it now before the movie comes out. because we know that this book is so good and so exciting that it is going to be a motion picture not too far from now, I think.
We'll see. I think Hollywood's a very... Well, Hollywood's a strange place. So the rights are sold. Margot Robbie's production company bought them, and they have a screenwriter and are in the process of...
Well, I know. I was a screenwriter, or I am a screenwriter. Mm-hmm. Screenwriters never die. They just sort of fade away and give up because you go into turnaround so many times that actually what happens to screenwriters, they put our work into turnaround. And so we spin around and around and around and around. So we're so dizzy that when we come out, we're like basket cases. And it's possible that this would go into turnaround, but I have a feeling this is actually going to make it. The reason is because, first of all, the minute this is one of the reasons that when I started reading, I said to myself, oh my goodness, oh my goodness, oh my goodness. You know, my fingers started getting itchy. I wanted to get to a keyboard. I could write the screenplay because it is such a good story. The book is so good. And I have a feeling this one is actually going to make it to the screen. And I want to be at the premiere. You have to invite me to the premiere because I am telling everyone that they have to buy this book, Fierce Kingdom, and don't spoil it by looking at the stuff on Amazon. Don't spoil it by going to the reviews. I hate when people just, they go to the reviews. And I mean, what's the point? What's the point after you read the reviews? Some I know some people who they're really, you know, this doesn't make sense to me. They go to the negative reviews first and they say, I had a friend who says, oh, I always check the 1-star reviews. I said, why? And she said, well, you know, they write there and you know, I found out that this author couldn't spell words and there were, you know, this grammatical errors. And I said, no. I said, the story, you want to read this story. Don't do that. And even, you know, you can't.
Now that's like every go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead.
It's like every author's worst nightmare that's what people would do is go online and read 1-star reviews. Like, I feel like 1-star reviewers are usually intensely critical people.
Oh, yeah, there's some, we'll say there's something wrong with them. That's, as my mother said, if you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all. Definitely, I don't think you're going to have any worry about that because everybody is raving about your book, and because it does not happen very often that right away you sell the film rights to a book, and that you've done it the book comes out and people already want it into a movie. There is a reason for it because, as I'm saying, Fierce Kingdom. The name is Fierce Kingdom, everybody, and the name is Jin Phillips, and you spell it G-I-N, right?
Correct, like the alcohol,
which is my favorite. I lived for many years in England, and in those days, I don't know if you're too young to know this, but in those days, the pubs were closed during the afternoon, and they opened. You could not go into a pub until 5 o'clock. And so everybody, I lived in a little village, and we had one little store and 3 pubs. I mean, that's about the right amount that you need in England. And we would be outside in front of the pub starting, well, depending on the weather, if it was nice weather, we'd be out there starting at 3:30. If not so nice, we'd be there by 4:45 waiting to get into the pub so we could have our first gin and tonic.
That's good. I'm glad it brings back positive associations.
A gin and tonic. Absolutely. I don't know if you were born with that name or your parents were just having fun in England. But it's a great name. It's a wonderful name to find you. It's real easy to find because there are not that many people with the name Gin.
No, that's true.
And Jen, I just, what can I say? I don't want to tell people about this story. I don't want to even say about the character. Let's suffice it to say, it is about a female character, and she's fierce, because that's why we have the name Fierce Kingdom in the title. And when you have a fierce woman, you know the story's going to be good. It's going to be strong. There's going to be action. It's wonderful in a book about a woman. You know, it's not a romance. It's an action. There's really a lot of action, actually, in this this story. And your characters are beautifully drawn. I'm not going to tell about them, but each one is absolutely perfectly drawn. And I hope that all of my listeners will just thrill in this book, because it doesn't come along that often that you get a book that really is, you know, they will always promote books that page turner and one that you can't put down. But in most cases, you can put it down after, you know, a chapter or two and go on with your life and come back. But in your case, I have a feeling that there are going to be a lot of people who just really this is not a book that let me put it this way. If you're the type of person who has a job, a 9-to-5 job, and you like to start a book at lunchtime, don't do it. I mean, just don't do it. I mean, because you won't work all afternoon, and you might get fired, and then you'll have to blame gin for it. And then the next thing you know, you'll be drinking gin and tonics in the unemployment line, and you'll go and they say, why aren't you employed? And you'll say, it's all because of gin. I'm unemployed because of gin. And, you know that could really be very, very, I don't know if you want that reputation. So I'm telling people.
Right, and then start it at night.
Yeah, start it at night. And you can go right through the night. And the next day, you know, because you haven't slept all night, call in sick. And that's the best way to do it. Because, Jen, I think you've done a terrific job. It's really, I'm even just thinking about the story and thinking about the excitement that I felt as I read it. And I read a lot of books. I get so many books that it takes a really, really good book to get me so excited about a book. And I think that you've done a terrific job.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Patsy, so much. I'm glad you're not letting me talk about it.
Okay. Okay. Well, you know, you'll probably get all of these interviews, and you'll do all these interviews, and people will talk about it. And then people will say, it sounds like something I might have heard about before, I've seen about before. No, this is a very special book. All people have to be told is, get out there and buy it already. Just get reading. And meanwhile, what are you working on? Because I'm sure you must be working on something new.
I am. So, we'll see. I've got a couple of manuscripts with an editor right now to see what comes next. One is about two women who've been friends from college until their 90s. Sort of focused on female friendship. And then another one is set back in the early 1900s in a utopian colony in the Deep South, which was a real thing. And I don't know, I love the idea of a bunch of intellectuals thinking that the perfect place to set up an egalitarian society would be like the rural South. And so, it wasn't necessarily super well-researched, but I don't know, I love the idea of utopia. I found that in a really interesting setting.
Well, it sounds exciting. And I think that you are a fantastic writer, and you know when a writer comes along that I really admire, I am so always thrilled to promote them. And I hope that you will enjoy. Now you have a big book tour, right? You're on a book tour.
I do. So yes, we head out. So today's radio, and then tomorrow I head out and just hop around from city to city for a little while.
Well, for your other books, you didn't have the big book tour, did you? This is your first big book tour?
I actually did I didn't go like out west, but usually I've sort of done this. Usually they've been more southeast tours.
Well, I think it's...
But I'd still be on the road, but I'm covering more ground this time.
Okay. Well, enjoy it. It's going to be fun, of course. And we're going to read the book, which is called Fierce Kingdom by Jen Phillips. Do you have a webpage that you want people to go to?
I do. So yeah, the website is just jenphillips.com. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter.
And they can find you, and when they finish the book, they can send you a note saying how wonderful it was. Because
They can let me know what they think.
Okay, Jen, thank you again so much for joining me. I will keep talking about your book over the next few weeks, just to remind people of it. But I'm not going to tell them anything more than that.
Okay. I like your plan. Thanks so much, Patsy. I appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye now. It was great talking
Thanks.
To you. Okay. Wow, she is sweet. And the book, as I said, there are times when you just don't want to know in advance. And I am getting more and more annoyed with some of the releases, especially on Amazon, where they tell you what's going to happen on the second page. You know, it just spoils it. Because when you start a book and you don't know what's going to happen, you don't know if the person on the first page is going to survive to the third page, or the person who at the beginning of a book is the good guy or the bad guy, and already they've written it on Amazon and said, well, the person in the on the first page is the person who's the killer. I mean, what's the whole point of it? It's just awful. I don't like that. So please, please make sure that you don't get to read all these spoilers, because it ruins the fun of it. And when you have a book like Jen Phillips' Fierce Kingdom, very nicely done, you'll be happier if you just read the book. And I just want to thank everyone for joining me today. Remember that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken on stage, on screen, as Jen Phillips is going to hear her words spoken someday in a film or in an audible book, because I'm getting more and more fond of audible books lately. I've been listening to more of them, and they can be lots of fun. And so I will actually have a program about audible books, just the recommendations. I am so enjoying discovering new narrators, and we will have a story about that. But meanwhile, I want to thank everyone, and I want you all to find your joy and share it, and make sure that you say something nice to somebody today. And I'm going to say something nice to Big Ed, because he's always so good to me, and I drive it crazy sometimes. But I do want to thank him, and he's just a wonderful, wonderful human being. So thank you, Big Ed. And he's going to salute me. Oh, he saluted me, and I saluted him back, because I love being saluted. Bye-bye for now. Bye.